to talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else? You can talk to us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves, but my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience or a combination, my world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role-play for you, fantasize with you, no fantasy is too taboo, and help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. For more information, call us at 213-291-9497. That's 213-291-9497 anytime you need to talk.
You're listening to Radio Susie One on the World Wide Web. And now, here she is, Dr. Susan Block.
Brothers and sisters, lovers and sinners, exhibitionists and anthropologists, voyeurs and auteurs, all you children of sex, and we are all children of sex. We may or may not be children of God, but until we start cloning ourselves, we are all children of sex. Yes, indeed, sex is our mama and our papa. And speaking of close relatives, tonight we're going to focus on our kissing cousins who swing from the trees as well as with each other. Bonobos. That's right, brothers and sisters, as those of you who know us know, we love bonobos. I have been in love with bonobos since 1994, when I first saw them on PBS in The Nature of Sex, and was moved to create the Block Bonobo Foundation and formulate the Bonobo Way. Peace through pleasure, inspired by the real bonobos, helping humans to liberate our inner bonobo, and helping, doing what we can, to save the real, highly endangered bonobos from extinction. Now, for those of you who don't know a bonobo from a banana, bonobos are a very rare species of chimpanzee. Like common chimps, bonobos are over 98% genetically similar to humans. And though they tend to be a lot hairier than us, and they don't build houses or churches or corporate skyscrapers or pentagons like we do, they do look and act remarkably like us. Take sex, for instance, my favorite subject. The genitals of bonobo females are rotated forward like human females, so bonobos can have face-to-face sex rather than just, you know, doggy style like most animals. Basically, bonobos can have sex in as many positions as humans can, even more actually, and they do have sex. A lot. And not just sexual intercourse, but fellatio, cunnilingus, massage, masturbation, gay sex, sex in different positions, group sex, and lots of long, deep, soulful French kissing. Very French. And kind of tantric, you know,
like tantric sex practitioners, or two people in love. Bonobos often gaze into each other's eyes as they have sex. But it's not just how bonobos have sex, it's how they use sex. As a barter, like, I'll give you an apple if you give me a hand job. To ease stress, like, don't be nervous, come here and sit on my face. And to reduce violent conflict. And here's the kicker. Unlike common chimps and humans, for that matter, bonobos have never been seen deliberately killing each other in the wild or captivity. Apparently all that hot sex just cools them out. The males are especially peaceful. And that's another point. Unlike common chimps and other great apes, bonobo society is not male-dominated. Female bonobos have very strong relationships, creating a kind of chimp version of sisterhood that gives the female a lot of power. And speaking of powerful females, I am delighted to introduce our very special guest tonight. Duke University bonobo research scientist and author of a truly spectacular new book called Bonobo Handshake. So, we've got her on the line, Vanessa Woods. Welcome to Radio Suzy One. Hello?
Hello.
There you are.
Hi, Dr. Susan. How are you?
I just love your book so much. Oh, my
God. Thank you.
And
you just gave such a wonderful introduction to bonobos. I don't really know what else I can say.
Oh, so much. Now I want to go deep into the heart of the Congo, where you went with, just no expectations, but you discovered so much. This is such a wonderful book for bonobo lovers like me, because it really does go deep into what bonobos are all about and really the history of the Congo. It's amazing. And it's a great introduction to bonobo novices, and it's even great for people who aren't interested in bonobos, though if you're not interested in bonobos, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, because it's a great love story.
So, oh, sorry, Dr. Susan, I'm having trouble hearing you. I think I'm having technical issues.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
Oh, okay.
So why don't you...
I can just barely hear you. I wonder if your technician can turn the sound up.
My technician is now fiddling with my dials.
Okay. I could hear you really clearly when you first talked, but then you got really faint.
Right, because he put you on. And my technician, by the way, is my husband. Okay, this is Max. Yes.
Well, my husband is gesturing at me right now and telling them that it's my phone. But I think what you said was that, this was the first book on bonobos, the first popular book on bonobos in over 10 years. And, you know, I was really trying hard to find some information out about them. And there hasn't been anything since Franz de Waal wrote The Forgotten Ape over 10 years ago. So
right.
I had to put something out there.
Well, your something is really something. And, can you just, in a coconut shell, give us, you know, your story of how you discovered bonobos and love?
Sure. Well, I actually fell in love with a boy, and he was actually the one who was really interested in bonobos, and I was more a chimp person, and like all chimp people, I thought that, you know, all other close primate relatives is completely irrelevant, and just the idea that there was this other cousin of ours out there was about as interesting as kind of, you know, another freckle on my arm. But, you know, bonobos, they're so, it's so hard not to fall in love with them once you spend time with them. And then, you know, we go to Congo every year, and once we were there, it was just, it's just impossible not to love them. They're just, they're the most amazing creatures.
They are, and you certainly make everyone fall in love with them in this book. Now, your husband is actually worked under Dr. Richard Wrangham, who's a friend of ours.
That is right, and your interview with Dr. Wrangham is completely notorious. All throughout Harvard, actually, and all the students.
It's gotten down to Duke, I guess.
The most well-known underground interview that Richard has done.
Well, you know, now, Vanessa, your interview with me will be notorious. So. Watch out. Now, yeah.
I hope so.
Well, you know, I mean, Demonic Males is a great book. We interviewed Dr. Wrangham back in 1996 or something like that, and we found him to be just such a breath of fresh British air because so many people were so kind of let's say uptight about bonobo sexuality and talking about it.
I mean, Demonic Males, it was an absolute landmark text. I mean, I think it really redefine the way we thought about certain biological bases that we have for, you know, aggression, and definitely, you know, bonobos in that book were this amazing alternative model we have for, you know, instead of this kind of chimpanzee side of us that is very sort of brutal and aggressive. And I mean, chimpanzees, they have a very nice side, but, you know, they also have this dark side. And bonobos, they don't really have that. And just like you say, they have a lot of sex. They have a lot of sex that really crosses a lot of our boundaries. And I think for that reason, they've really been pushed into a closet or under the rug or whatever you want to say. And I think that's a real shame.
Well, it is, because we have to save them, number one.
We do have to thank them. Yes, it is very inspiring to watch them.
We have to save them.
It's a little baffling. It's like, what are you guys doing? But yes, they're amazing.
They are, and it's wonderful to see a book like yours that really doesn't pussyfoot around the sex. I mean, the sex is right there, front and center.
I mean, I think sex is a really important part of who bonobos are, and I think, I guess people get scared off by the fact that, you know, sex is this mechanism for them to reduce tension in the group, and because, I mean, you know, that we've seen homosexuality in other animals, but I think to see it so kind of fragrantly in an animal that looks so similar to us and shares so much what makes us human, I think that makes people really uncomfortable, which is one of the reasons why bonobos have been ignored.
Well, the homosexuality is one thing. I mean, the sexuality across generations, there's a lot of stuff that is unnerving. But
that's right. Yeah, there's a lot of taboos that bonobos break, but actually it's not, I think it's really humans that have the problem, because the reason why I called the book Bonobo Handshake was because for bonobos, it's just, sex is just not a big deal. It's like, hi, how are you? How are you doing? As you were describing earlier, I was chuckling. But I mean, it's just not an issue for bonobos. It's not a big deal at all.
No, and it's amazing how they use it to reduce violent conflict so that they don't have these wars that common chimps and humans have.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to watch them as well. Like, somebody gets really anxious in the group and somebody else will come over and just have sex with them, basically. And it's not usually to completion. I mean, you know, you don't see that much more ejaculation. Like, the rate of, you know, conceptual copulation in bonobos isn't that much higher than chimpanzees. But the non-conceptive sex, what we think of as, I guess, sex for pleasure and sex for fun, is a lot higher in bonobos. And that's what's really incredible about them. A
lot of rubbing.
A lot of rubbing, a lot of foreplay, as you would say.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see in bonobos is, it's crazy, is that when they get anxious, they just have to rub themselves on something. You know,
I think a lot of humans would like to do that.
Another bonobo, it's you if you happen to be there. It's the floor if there's no one else around. But it seems to be this really primal urge with them. They get anxious, they've got to,
Well, it's beautiful to see you writing about this their sexuality and explaining it so I can understand it even better. I know that when I first started writing and talking about it, you know, a lot of people in the primatology world were upset with me. They said I was turning the bonobos into porn stars. And I kept saying, I'm not making them do anything.
You know, I mean, I think what you do is wonderful, because I think that people should be talking about bonobos somehow. I don't care what they say about them, and I don't care how they talk about them, but the fact that they're not talked about at all, I think that's the real crime, because they're going to go extinct, and no one's going to know anything about them, and that is going to be a real loss. Because the fact is that, you know, just because bonobos have a lot of sex, I mean, it doesn't even really matter. The fact is that they found a way to live in a society without violence, and we need to be figuring out how.
Say it, sister. Yes, they have. We need to figure out how before we blow ourselves up. Now,
well,
I'm not...
exactly, and you know, for just like you said, for skyscrapers and condos and pentagons, we haven't been able to figure out how to live without violence, and you know, bonobos have. So, I mean, tell me who's smarter.
There you go. I mean, I think we're smarter in certain ways, and they're smarter in certain ways. I mean, it's not...
No, we're totally dumb.
We
don't get it.
Well, I mean, they do have this kind of idyllic life, especially in a place like Claudine André's Lola Ya Bonobo, the Bonobo Paradise. And Richard Wrangham told us about Claudine years ago, and we just think of her as just like this saint of bonobos. And your book is very much an homage to her work. She is quite an incredible woman.
She is. And, you know, I think if you're lucky enough, then you really get to know a true hero. And Claudine is really one. She has done more for bonobos than I think anybody else in the world. I mean, her sanctuary not only, you know, takes care of these 60 orphans, but, you know, she has like 30,000 people go through her sanctuary every year, and most of them are Congolese. And then for the first time last year, Lola Ya Bonobo released these 9 orphans back into the wild. So Claudine is just wonderful. She's absolutely wonderful. She's done so much for bonobos, and she really is. She is an angel of the bonobos. That's what the French call her.
Yes, and you're doing a lot for bonobos. As a matter of fact, I was so moved by your story of saving Kata, the little baby bonobo girl, that I went to friendsofbonobos.com and I adopted her.
That was you! Oh, yeah, I have a look at all the adoptions, and I saw your name, and I'm like, oh, Susan Block is going to be interviewed. I'm like, no, it must be a very common name. Thank you.
How many Susan Blocks would be adopting Kata? I'm sure that she must have like 30 adoptive parents by now, but you know, it takes a village to raise a child, and it takes the whole world to save the bonobos, so hop on board.
Especially someone as sweet as Kata. She's adorable, and you know, all the bonobos, they have such different personalities, and she's just so sweet and so loving, and she just loves to hug. So I'm glad you're a new adopted mom. That's a beautiful story.
And you were her baby mama when she got there. I mean,
well,
pretty much.
Well, all the bonobos, they immediately need a body to cling to. So there are 4 Congolese women there called the mamas with a capital M. But I couldn't stay away from her. I spent a lot of time with her to start with, and then, you know, we thought she was going to die, and I don't want to give the book away, but obviously since she's adopted, I can say that she had this incredible strength of spirit that, you know, that was incredibly human in some ways, and she made it, and it's just, every time I see her, it makes my heart sing.
Yes, and yet we were talking about, you know, the strengths of human versus bonobo, and one of the things that, you know, being so empathetic and being so emotional, the bonobos can have a little weakness there. I mean, they're not as hardy as common chimps.
That was just kind of my observation. But you know, if a chimpanzee orphan, if they make it to the sanctuary, chances are they're going to survive. I mean, you know, chimps, they're so tough and they're so strong. that they're just the absolute survivors. And, you know, with medical care and, you know, the right nutrition, they usually make it. But bonobos, I have absolutely seen them just come to Lalea Bonobo, and there's something different about them. There's something more fragile, and they've just seen their mothers shot. And even though they can be in the best physical health and have the best veterinary care in the world, they just, you know, it's like a light goes out and they just die, which is, you know, and that's also incredibly human.
And of course, this is the terrible thing that's happening all the time, although maybe less, is that bonobos are getting shot in the jungle for bushmeat. Is it less?
Yes. So the Congolese, it's illegal, but they do hunt bonobos for meat. And this is something that Claudine has been wonderful at addressing. It's just, you know, education programs aimed at Congolese people to you know, just educate them. In fact, that bonobos, they don't live anywhere else. They only live in Congo. And this is, she's done a really wonderful job convincing them that this is an animal that they should treasure.
Absolutely. And, I mean, it's there's the bushmeat trade, and there's the whole war or wars that are going on in that area. I mean, it's an area, a country that's been racked with wars, and your book is a very it just makes it so clear what's going on there, which to me was just as muddy as the Congo River, whose faction is what and what their history is. And you were very motivated to look into the whole mystery of war because your father served in the Vietnam War.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, really, before I went over to Congo for the first time with Brian, I was very, very frightened. And, you know, I'd also been reading, like you, about the things that had been going on in Congo, and they just seemed so savage and so brutal. And, you know, the fact that my father had been in the Vietnam War was really the only reason I could think of for going over and putting myself in, you know, in a country that was so dangerous. And just the reason why I felt compelled to write about Congo was that, you know, the more I learned, the more I realized that our role in it, as in, you know, America and Australia and Europe, we all were driving that war because of our need for the minerals that are really just found in Congo, like coltan. Like 70% of the world's supply is there, and we all have coltan in our mobile phones and our laptops. And
don't make me hate my iPhone.
I mean, yeah, the Congo War is something that ultimately we're all responsible for. It's not this sort of savage tribal thing that happened in this backwater country in Africa. It was definitely part of the global economy. And yeah, so I felt very responsible for it.
We all are. We all are responsible. And I just believe that we all need to do what we can to help to save these creatures and to learn what we can about our kissing cousins. So, you know, we can have better sex as well, not just end the wars. I mean, not that that's a just. But sometimes I think it's very inspiring to look at any animals. You know, I don't know. I prefer to look at the Discovery Channel and see documentaries on sex to watching human porn. I think it's... I mean, maybe call me weird. Okay. But... I was just wondering, you know, you're there with your fiancé and then your newlyweds, and you're watching these creatures have this fabulous sex. I mean, you know, they're hairy and everything.
Well, I said I knew this coming into my show. So it was really funny. So you see the bonobos, they're having sex all the time. And I got asked on NPR whether I'd ever seen a bonobo threesome. And I'm like, threesome? I'm like, I haven't seen a 20-some.
Yeah.
It's just the... Yeah, when it happens, it's quite... And, you know, for me, it was... when I was first seeing this stuff, it wasn't so much erotic, it's just completely jaw-dropping. I'm like, what? I'd never, ever... I mean, when you talk about Gigi rubbing, which is when the two females rub their clitorises together, and they look like they're orgasming to me. I mean, it's hard to tell, but, you know, they've got the facial expressions, and they're, like, screaming, and, like, my jaw was just on the floor. And then, of course, there's the smacking sound of, like, you know, they're swirling, like, rubbing together. I mean, it's not so much, I didn't feel so much turned on, it was just completely stunned. I'm like, I've never even heard of this before.
Well, yes, and they are unusual. I mean, I don't know of any other creature besides human females that has a clitoris that is so prominent and obvious.
Yes, it is. It's pretty prominent. It's pretty huge when you see it. It's very impressive, and there's no missing the bonobo clitoris, that is for sure.
Yes, even with the babies. I mean, your book has them rubbing up against you and just, not for sex, but just trying to make themselves feel good.
Yeah, it's just they get anxious. You know, and this is something that Carter did a lot, is that, you know, she was so kind of lost without her mother, and then, you know, she was just really recovering and trying to find out her place, and she would just, you know, she would see me, and she was happy to see me, but she was also, you know, really anxious, and so she would just sort of, like, rub her clitoris all over my stomach, and it wasn't erotic at all. It was just, said hi.
Yeah, the handshake.
Yeah, the bonobo handshake. That's exactly right.
Consensuality is very important to bonobo sex. I mean, bonobos...
Yes, it can be. It definitely can be. When they're not having sex because they're anxious, I have seen... Well, I mean, sex in bonobos is very playful, as well. And that's what you see. You see a lot of play with sex. And I think if your listeners were going to take something away, I think it should be that. Sex should be fun.
That's what we talk about when we say liberate your inner bonobo, is to
playful.
That's right.
And that's something that we see a lot of in bonobos, is play. And so, you know, the sex and the play, sometimes it's effort and sometimes they intermingle. So I would say if you wanted a key to a good sex life, that would pretty much be it.
Well, you know, I work with couples sometimes who just have lost the playfulness in their sex life, and I play them a video of bonobos, and sometimes they get inspired to, you know, swing from the chandeliers.
Yes, I'm sure bonobos can be very inspiring.
And it's not just the sex, but maybe this is related to the sex, but bonobos are incredibly tolerant, and their tolerance for each other allows them to outperform chimpanzees on cooperative tasks.
Yes, that's right. And so, you know, when I say that sex isn't even the most important thing about bonobos, that's really what I'm talking about, is that, you know, we think of cooperation, which is really important to human society. I mean, when you're talking about the Pentagon and the skyscrapers, this is really how we got to where we are now, is, you know, through human cooperation. And we tend to think of it as something that's cognitive, so something that's based on intelligence. But what we found with chimpanzees was that even though they were incredibly good cooperators, their cooperation essentially fell apart because of intolerance. But with bonobos, you know, they ended up being better cooperators than chimpanzees because, you know, they weren't constrained by their emotions. So they weren't, they were just incredibly tolerant. And so, you know, with human cooperation, sometimes what constrains our ability to cooperate with one another isn't intelligence at all, is that we're emotionally constrained. You know, we don't like the other person, or, you know, we don't feel like they should be part of the group that we're working with. So yeah, this was something really interesting to see with bonobos, is that, you know, because their emotions are set up differently to chimpanzees, they actually ended up cooperating better.
And I do think that's related to sex, and of course I am a bit, you know, obsessed with sex. Nevertheless,
they did have more sex and play during the cooperation task than chimpanzees did, definitely.
Sure, and you're often more tolerant of your lover than you are of other people or other creatures.
Well, yes, and you know, how many people do you feel like picking a fight with after you've just had an orgasm?
Right, you know, it cools you out. All that hot sex.
It certainly would be a great facilitator. I don't know whether it's going to be a human... I mean, you know, if you talk about human cooperation and human peace among Earth and goodwill to all, I don't really think that sex is going to be our mechanism. I don't know, the White House... I think it was Diane Rehm, whether the White House was more bonobo-like, they would get more... And maybe it would, but that's not really something I want to see when I turn on the television and watch the presidential address. But I think that what we can learn from bonobos is that they have a mechanism to reduce tension, to better cooperate, and, you know, to live peacefully. And whatever our mechanism ends up being, whether it's sex or not, we need to find one, because, you know, people are dying, there are wars going on, and, you know, it's a real thing. And violence towards women is also a really big factor in our society, which is, you know, and we share this with chimpanzees. And this is not a problem that bonobos have. So, you know, what more important cousin do we have to study than the bonobos?
Yes, and, well, first, just an aside, I do disagree with you about the White House thing. I'm sorry, but I would love to see the President and the First Lady having sex. I mean, you know,
that would be fun for you.
I would like to see that, but I understand that that's not necessarily for everybody. That would be pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a porno made of that, actually. It did pretty well, so I think people do want to see that. But in any case, all right, you know, I know, it's not, it's, we can't completely copy the bonobos.
This kind of pushes me out a little bit. I don't know why.
Yes, but now, testosterone. We usually think of that as making, you know, us aggressive and kind of ready to fight. But bonobos have very high levels of testosterone.
Oh, yes. Okay, so testosterone is correlated with different things. You know, I'm not sure I would say it causes aggression, but, you know, having high testosterone is correlated with certain things, and one of them is aggression, but also one of them is a really high sex drive. And, you know, actually Richard Wrangham's student, Tori Weber, Richard Wrangham has a legacy of our students working on bonobos, and she found that young bonobos have very high testosterone compared to young chimpanzees, and, you know, this could be a reason for their high sex drive when they're young. But actually, Tori also had another study just come out this week that, you know, before sharing food, intolerant male chimpanzees, they showed a spike in their testosterone, you know, which shows they're getting ready for competition. And intolerant male bonobos actually had a spike in cortisol, which is correlated with stress. So just at the thought that, you know, there might be some kind of fight or some kind of dispute or some kind of, you know, conflict, bonobo males get incredibly stressed. Whereas, you know, chimpanzees, we didn't see this at all.
Interesting. So, you know, you were talking earlier about anything that's said about bonobos is kind of good. I might disagree a little bit with that. I think, any publicity is good publicity. But
Just put my name right, B-O-N-O-B-O.
Yeah, right. But bonobos got kind of a bad rap in a New Yorker article by Ian Parker. Was it a couple years ago or a year ago?
Swingers. Well, I mean, a lot of the cognitive stuff hadn't come out then. So I think that article was just sort of covering old grounds. Like, I mean, are bonobos these massive swinging hippie apes? You know, the porn stars, as you say. And I think I think that article kind of missed the point, because, and also missed a lot of the work that, to be fair, has only come out in the last couple of years. But this question of how different bonobos are from chimpanzees, are they really, you know, female dominated? Do they really have that much sex? Is that an artifice of captivity or not? And I think what you find with Tori Weber's study is that, you know, you can't argue with physiological data. I mean, you know, the bonobos and chimpanzees, their hormones are set up completely differently, and they are different. They are so different. And I think that the article did a disservice to the bonobos in that they just, they missed the point. I mean, you know, bonobos are similar to chimpanzees in one way or another, it's just kind of irrelevant. I mean, they don't kill each other. They don't beat their females. And, you know, their infants have quite a nice life. So this is something that we can learn from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this guy was totally off center, and not only that, he was so involved with his own sloshing through.
Well, there's a lot of sloshing involved.
The jungle, and you know, like he's some kind of hero, and then he's telling these kind of wrong stories, in essence, and the right wing all loved it because
yes,
yeah,
the right wing
yeah,
jumped
yeah,
on it.
They, I suppose so, but I mean, I think regardless of, and that's Gottfried Heumann, the scientist
yes.
that he went to see bonobos in the wild, and you know, we know Gottfried very well, and his data is excellent. He's an excellent, excellent scientist, but I think he gets frustrated with, you know, the portrayal of bonobos as porn stars when, you know, the differences can be a lot more subtle than that. And it's true, because in the wild, you don't see the rates of sex that you do in captivity, or the rates.
Although
of food.
I'm watching some
but,
of your videos
I mean,
right now.
Sorry?
I don't know. I said I'm watching some of your videos that you have up on YouTube. We've got them playing in the background here. And I must say, there's quite a bit of sex in the wild.
There's, I did do that. That was my point. That was my answer to the Ian Parker New Yorker article, Do Bonobos Have More Sex Than Chimpanzees? And actually, I did a study, and I haven't published it yet, but it's coming. And just to have a look at infant chimpanzees as compared to infant bonobos. And, you know, these were all orphan groups, so they didn't kind of learn how to have sex from the adults in the group because, you know, they were peer-raised in the nursery. And what I found was that bonobo babies have so much more sex. And they have sex usually, so this is when the food comes. The bonobo babies, they're just crazy about sex.
They combine all
kinds of positions for about 15 minutes before the food and then during the food, and chimpanzees have none of that. So even from a very, very early age, we see this, you know, propensity for sociosexual behavior in bonobos that we just don't see in chimpanzees.
Well, I'm sure you need to be, you know, respectful of Gottfried Heumann, and I mean, I respect his work too, because I'm not a primatologist, and you've got to really be strong to get out there in the bush there. But I couldn't understand how he could look at two females doing the GG rubbing, the hoka hoka, which they call it in the village, I guess, which is like the bonobo tango, except they rub their genitals together instead of cheek to cheek, and say that that's not sex.
I'm not sure that's what Gottfried was saying. I think Gottfried is more just trying not to turn this animal that he spent a long time studying into a kind of a parody. And, you know, and I think that people can take bonobos and just take it way too far. And, you know, the first explosion of news of bonobos in the 80s was there's nothing but sex, 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 sex. But, I mean, now we're just finding out so much more that's interesting about them, like the cooperation, like the tolerance, like the fact that, you know, they spontaneously share in a way that I would call altruism. I know other scientists would disagree. But so, you know, and Gottfried's work will just really continue to add to what we know about bonobos. And, I think it's all important, but I think the New Yorker, they need to do a re-coverage.
Yes, they do, because a lot of people take the New Yorker as gospel. So that's why I think we're jumping on them, because they've got to do something new, maybe an interview with you and your husband.
Yes, but I mean, you know, at least the people who read the New Yorker article have heard of bonobos, and, you know,
well,
there's
that's
a ton
true.
Of studies coming out. So, they'll at least know what they are when they read the latest research.
And so often bonobos are kind of not mentioned, like when Ardi was discovered. Ardi is the 4.4 million year old fossil of a human ancestor. And, you know, a lot of reporters were saying, hey, Ardi doesn't seem to be related to a chimpanzee because Ardi is peaceful and Ardi walks upright. But Ardi, as Franz de Waal pointed out, looks a lot like a bonobo. Why did
that's he? Right. And it was interesting that Owen Lovejoy, the principal scientist, left that out.
Great
and,
name,
you know,
Lovejoy.
It might be because, you know, he wanted it to be, you know, something completely new. I don't know why he wouldn't have said that, because it seems, you know, completely obvious. But bonobos is left off the map in scientific research more than you can ever imagine. I mean, even in all the scientific papers, all that's talked about is our closest relative, the chimpanzee. Nobody ever says, one of our closest relatives, the chimpanzee, because, you know, there's also the bonobo. So, I mean, there's this precedent set in science to really sort of push bonobos into a closet. And, I just think it's a shame.
Yeah, and there's been a recent study on chimpanzees and chimp warfare that says that lethal intergroup aggression leads to territorial expansion in wild chimpanzees. Dr. John Mitani, and of course all the warmongers are jumping on this and saying, see, war is inevitable. War is in our genes. We have no choice but being war-making, war-mongering creatures. Because the chimps are our relatives, and they don't mention bonobos.
War is in
our
bank accounts.
Yes, that's right.
War is in our bank accounts.
I think that's why people had such a strong reaction to demonic males, is that, you know, they thought what Richard was saying was that this is because, you know, this is where we are and this is where we came from, that this is the way it should be. But, you know, he also talks about bonobos, and we are also, you know, 98.7% bonobo, and we do, and I think it's really important to understand the biological basis for aggression and where, you know, wars and rape and all that kind of thing, where it comes from. But, I mean, we're so intelligent and we're so good at, you know, I guess, overcoming our biology and changing our destinies that, you know, this is... We already try. I mean, we've got police forces and justice systems to make sure that we don't act like chimpanzees whenever we feel like it, but we need more. And I think that by really looking at bonobos and understanding them, we might be able to overcome this.
We might. We have a chance if we give them a chance and we give peace a chance. Oh, it's all so hippie, you know. But I have some people here who have some questions for you too, if you don't mind.
Go ahead. Sit
down in your seats, children. Okay, like good boys and girls here. Okay, help them with their mics. Okay. First of all, we have Shari Baby. Shari, can you turn on Shari's microphone? Oops, oh, move her down one microphone. Okay, we're crowded. Okay. Turn her mic up. Okay. Hey, Shari.
Hi, Dr. Wong.
Okay, do we hear her? I don't hear her on the mic. Okay, say it again.
Hi, can you hear me?
I hear this microphone.
Hello,
oh, there you go.
Me?
Okay.
Hi.
Hey, Shari.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm talking about bonobos. I'm in my element.
I know, and I'm watching this beautiful woman on TV.
She is very beautiful.
With all these beautiful chimp. Well, they're
they're different
are they
kind
chimps?
Of beauty.
Would you say that they're? No, you can't.
They
call
are
them
chimps.
Chimps.
They're a kind of.
It's
chimp.
It's really confusing. I mean, you know, there's a common chimpanzee and there's a pygmy chimpanzee, but I think I think you can just call them chimps and bonobos.
Okay, so if someone like me, a layperson, were to see a chimpanzee and a bonobo, how would they differ in the way they look?
That's a very good question. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really, really tough because bonobos and chimpanzees, they do look very, very similar. The thing that you can look for is that bonobos have very black faces and they have pink lips, just like us, and then they have this really cute side part of hair, like it's really cute parting of hair that goes right down the middle, and they're a little more slender than chimpanzees, but it's very difficult.
And their jaw doesn't stick out as much.
People who, you know, study primates, they can't tell them apart.
And in terms of how, you know, the sheer number of, say, chimps versus bonobos, are there more chimps, more bonobos?
Yeah. No. So bonobos are the most endangered great ape. They're more endangered than chimps, they're more endangered than gorillas. Nobody really knows for sure how many there are, but it could be as few as 10,000. I mean, it could be as many as 40,000, but I mean, even that, that wouldn't fill a football stadium, really. So
very good questions, Shari. You get a banana. Here you go. Shari
thank
gets a
you.
Banana.
Thank
All right.
you. Thank
we'll
you.
Go back to your questions.
Perfect.
And I forgot your name.
I'm Jeanette.
Jeanette, right. Jeanette.
Yes, hi.
Welcome
hi.
To Radio Suzy One.
Hi.
Is this your first time hearing about bonobos?
It is, yes.
Really?
Well, I mean, I've heard of...
Whoa.
I've heard of heard of them and about them, yes.
Yes, but you really
but
got in depth.
Depth. Not right. in depth, yes. And so. I haven't read the book yet.
No, well, we didn't expect you to, and okay. this is not a test.
Okay, okay.
But did you have any questions for
I
our
do
guests?
Have a question.
Go ahead.
Okay, so my question is, in bonobo relationships, how do the males and females work together to rear younger generations? And how does that work out, male to male and female
good
to male,
question.
Female to male?
You get a banana.
Oh,
here you
oh,
go.
Sorry, Dr. Zuna, I didn't hear the question. Can
she wants to know about how the males and the females work together in the group, because, of course, usually you don't know who the father is of a bonobo baby. They know who the
oh,
mother is
oh,
to
so
raise
how
the children.
How does raising kids work? Mm-hmm. Well, the most important individual to a baby bonobo is its mother, and if you're a boy bonobo, this is how you get your status in the group. It's actually through your mother. So I guess the difference between chimps and bonobo babies is that when chimpanzee males reach adolescence, they start beating up every female in their group. Mm. Including their mothers. And
these are common chimps.
So with chimpanzees, the way that the males get status is that they beat up their mothers. And with bonobos, it's by being nice to their mothers that they get status. So that's the kind of the difference in the rearing. And in terms of who raises the kids, usually it's the females. But, I mean, baby bonobos, they're kind of like in charge of the group. Like, they get to do anything they want. They can walk right up to the alpha male and, like, take food out of their mouths. Like, it's really incredible to watch. So it seems to be kind of like a communal thing.
Definitely. And, I mean, all the males don't know whose children is whose, so they all kind of take care.
Yeah, there's concealed paternity in bonobos as there is with chimpanzees, but usually the alpha male fathers most of the kids.
Ah, except those sneaky little, you know, interloper bonobos that you don't know.
Yeah.
So, okay, and
Patrick. Yes, thank you so much. As the last question reminds me of times with Terence McKenna. I studied with Terence McKenna for a long time, and he used to talk about the partnership society, an evolutionary time in our history, much longer than in the last 2,000 or 3,000 years, where because the paternity issue wasn't the central focus, there was more group paternity. We had an era of our history called a partnership society. And it was only with the pegging of the patriarchal paternal system that we became this warring culture, and the idea of losing the bonobo is heartbreaking.
Bonobo,
of course,
right?
The bonobo.
Got to spell it right.
Yeah,
bonobo.
Yeah.
But you know, I you got some good points there, Patrick. Except that common chimps, who do make war, they confuse paternity too.
Right. No, it sounds like bonobo might have found the sacred mushroom or that same energy, because that's what Terrence was saying, is we're inspired by the sacred mushroom.
Okay. Well, here's a sacred banana.
Good, thanks.
Did you have a question for our guest?
I do. I'd like to know what group within the Congo, who within the Congo has the bonobo's best interest in mind, and who can we really support? Who do we make sure that we throw our energy behind to make sure that there is a thriving, safe future for the bonobo?
Well,
oh, sorry, what was that? If
okay.
It was
he wants to know which group or groups we should support to help save the bonobos. And
oh, no, that's easy. Friends of Bonobos. So it's friendsofbonobos.org. And so Claudine Andre started this. It's the American organization that supports all the work that they're doing over there. So that is the orphanage of bonobos. It supports their education programs. It supports, you know, the release of bonobos back into the wild. So, Friends of Bonobos, it's an amazing organization. And
Adopt a bonobo.
It does so much.
I adopted a bonobo.
And Claudine has lived in the Congo for 60 years now, so really there's no one better. She's hugely connected into the government. She's been really instrumental in, you know, helping enforce the laws with confiscation of bonobos, and she's just amazing. Friends of Bonobos. You can adopt a bonobo.
Adopt a bonobo.
Like Susan.
But not Kata. That's mine. No, you can adopt Kata too. So we have another friend who is involved in bonobo conservation, Sally Cox. Do you know her?
Yes, Sally Cox. Yes, Bonobo
yes.
Conservation International. Yes, she's
yes.
doing the Peace Forest, I think.
Yes. And we've supported her work in the past and her efforts, and she's another bonobo lover, Sally Cox. She's at bonobo.org.
Yes, that is wonderful. And it's just, it's so wonderful that you're helping to support bonobos, because bonobos don't have many friends here.
Well, they're getting more friends, you know.
They're getting more friends, it's true. It's building momentum. And, you know, this year is just going to be so big for bonobos because the bonobo genome's coming out. You know, there was my book, which is the first book on bonobos for a popular audience in 10 years. And then, have you heard of Sarah Gruen? She's
Yes.
Water for Elephants.
Right. And she wrote a wonderful comment on your book.
Yeah, and then I just read one called, and Sarah Gruen's is called Ape House, and then I just read something called Lucy about a half-human, half-bonobo girl. So I think this is...
There's a half-human, half-bonobo girl book called Primal Tears. And it's a beautiful book. She's a fellow Counterpunch writer that wrote it, it's called Primal Tears.
Oh wow!
And it's a beautiful book about a half human, half bonobo, hybrid. It's of course a fantasy, but
it
conveys a wonderful message.
I read Lucy, which was a half human, half bonobo, but I didn't realize there was another half human, half bonobo.
I'm going to send you a link. Yeah, I'll send you a link to it.
Okay, awesome.
But, you know, you're not on Twitter enough. I've been adding you. You have to at me and follow me so you can become controversial.
I'll join you.
Even more controversial, yeah. So, Nori, did you want to talk to our guest?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Can you get on the mic there? Okay, we're going to give him a mic? Mic. Whoa.
Let me try that.
You got a good view here?
Need a headset. Something that'll work better.
Okay. Headset. Here you go. Yep.
Sorry about that. Hi, Vanessa.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, fantastic. I actually had a couple questions and one comment. There's also another book that mentions a chimpanzee-human hybrid in Michael Crichton's book a couple years ago. I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Oh, yeah, someone told me about that. I completely forgot, but yeah. Was it a bonobo hybrid?
It doesn't specifically mention a bonobo hybrid. It just mentions chimpanzee in the book, so. I'm pretty sure it was chimpanzee, so. But my question is, I watched something that was really touching the other day about the way that bonobos interact with their dead afterwards, and I was really moved by that, and I just wanted to know, what kind of rituals or things do other chimpanzees have, or specifically bonobos? Is this something that you witnessed while you were out there? Or?
Well, if you go to my website, bonobohandshake.com, there on the videos page, there was something just really incredible. The alpha female, Mimi, it's a video of her defending the body of this 7-year-old male bonobo called Lopopo who died. And it was just amazing because Lopopo had only been in the group for about a year, and you know, Mimi didn't really know him that well. And also, she doesn't particularly like the little boys because they're right down the bottom of the hierarchy. And she defended his body. The keepers were trying to get the body out, and they were poking these long sticks through the fence to try and get the body out. It must have been terrifying for her.
Oh, yeah.
She was screaming, and she would not let the body go. And the clincher was when the vet turned up with a dart gun to tranquilize her. And the dart gun looks like a gun. It looks like a shotgun. And the last thing that all these bonobos saw before their mother's dad was a man with a gun, and she still would not let the body go. And
yeah, she
protected that body, and all the other bonobos came, and they kissed, and they groomed the body, and my God, the thing that just broke my heart was that Matadi, Lopopo's best friend, he was another small bonobo boy, he came up, and he said goodbye, and it was just... Oh. It was just the most amazing thing to see, and you know, I had to cut the video down and make it short, but you know, if you watch that, I really challenge you to say that, you know, that animals don't have feelings, that they can't feel grief, that they can't feel love, that they don't have any kind of higher emotions. I mean, I don't think that you could say anything of the sort after watching the video.
It really is so moving. It's an amazing video, and there are some descriptions in your book of bonobo reactions to death.
When one of the things is when you told me, I guess it's in the book, mm-hmm. about when they're about to be shot, what they do with their hands.
Oh, they beg for their life.
Yeah. And
They reach out their hand.
That's what one of the Congolese keepers told me. He said that, you know, he heard around his village that when if a hunter aims a gun at the bonobo, they clap. You know, as in, please don't shoot me. And
they clap and hold up.
They don't run. They just go. Amazing. That's just brings tears to my eyes right now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, there's a lot of tears that come from getting deep into this subject, and your book is full of laughter and tears, both. It's very intense.
Well, I wanted to make it I wanted to make it a hopeful book, because I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot of books about Congo that's kind of, you know, like it's doomed, and you know, sometimes it's hard because bonobos, they're the most endangered ape and their numbers are probably declining, but I mean, I think there's always hope. I think there's hope to overcome our nature. There's hope to overcome. I think the next 10 years, I think, will be really important for bonobos, and I really believe we can save them.
I do too, and your book gives me a lot more hope than I used to have. I mean, when I interviewed Dr. Wrangham in 1996, that was you couldn't even get in there. Well, maybe you were there, or you were there later, but it was a little bit like maybe they're not even there, you know. It was very scary, and now I feel like there is hope that there are people like you and like Claudine who are really working hard to save these creatures, and there's enough of them that are like Kata that have this strong will to survive.
Well, thank you, Dr. Susan. We are trying.
Yeah, well, we have to try with you. And now bonobos are getting so popular. I mean, you know, it's we even have this bonobos clothing line.
Oh, I love them. Oh, my God, bonobos.com. And I actually know the CEO, Andy Dunn, and he is amazing. And he's given tens of thousands of dollars to friends of bonobos.
Really?
And I mean, you know,
that's great.
My husband has like four of their pants, and they're like really really amazing. Like, they fit like no other pants. I don't want to try it on. And so, you know, yeah. And so many people, I think, they're getting excited about bonobos, and they're getting excited about helping bonobos. So I think the next 10 years, I think we could really make a big difference.
Well, we're gonna try. I want to get some of those pink pants that go with my pink phone.
Right.
Awesome. I get some pants.
A lot of pink shorts and stuff. Yeah, they're very cute.
I'm wearing my pink shirt.
Cute.
Yeah.
And the ad is so cute. It shows these guys jumping like they're bonobos,
right,
you know, in their shorts. It's kind of cute.
Well, yes, they're very bonobo-like in bonobos.com. And they have shorts as well, so go nuts.
Mm-hmm. But don't dress up real bonobos in shorts, because...
No, don't dress up real bonobos. They belong in Congo.
So what is it you're doing now at Duke University?
At Duke? So we're keeping going with all the bonobo stuff. So we go back to Congo every year. And really, we're just sort of after this question, you know, what is it that makes us human? And we study everything that we think can give us an answer. So we also study dogs and lemurs and, you know, of course, chimpanzees and bonobos. So, yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. We're Brian and I are very lucky.
And have you ever been out to San Diego to see our bonobos in the zoo?
The San Diego, Brian has seen the San Diego bonobos, and he loves the San Diego bonobos. And I've been to Columbus to see the bonobos over there, and I would really encourage all your listeners, go to a zoo that has bonobos. There's some in Columbus, Ohio, San Diego, like you mm-hmm. said. There's some in Milwaukee Zoo, in Wisconsin, Florida Zoo, in Jacksonville. So, you know, if you get a chance, go and see bonobos for yourself. And they'll probably do something crazy while you're there. So in some zoos,
they
kind of like tucked away a little bit, but it's really worth your while. Go and find them. Just watch them. They're incredible. You'll fall in love with them, I promise.
I think the best time to go is either early in the morning or late. They seem
to... The best time to go is when the food arrives, because then you'll get to see them having lots of sex.
Maybe that's when they feed them, is early in the morning, and then later they feed them.
Whenever the food comes.
Yeah. And so you haven't met the San Diego Zoo bonobos. I wonder if Brian knows our friend Lana.
Oh, I'm sure. If he's ever near a zoo with bonobos, he goes straight there to have a look at them.
Lana actually has a relationship with us. I mean, it's on our website, but we met her in 1996, and then I went there again a couple of times,
and then one time with the French TV crew.
It was very hot, and none of the bonobos were doing anything. And this French TV crew, they really wanted to shoot bonobos having sex. But the bonobos just, you know, they weren't being fed, I guess, and it was hot, and they were just laying around, and we were all kind of like, okay. But then suddenly Lana comes bounding up to the window where I'm standing, and she puts her hand on the window, and then I put my hand on the window, and then she puts her other hand, and I put my other hand, and then she puts her foot, and, you know, me, I put my foot. And then she, like, goes right up to the window, and she gives me this big kiss, this big tongue kiss all over the window.
It was amazing.
And the French people got their sex, but in a way that they weren't expecting. I mean, it was quite a bonobo handshake.
And they just were charming.
Yes, and she showed me her baby. She had a little baby
with
her.
Yeah, then she brought her baby. She went and got the baby.
Oh, the baby.
Yes.
Oh, my God, it's so cute.
And so we're sitting there, like, with the window between us, kind of making out, you know? I mean, I don't think I would have done this if the window wasn't between me, believe me. But the window between us, it was all cool. But then suddenly, these other two female bonobos come bounding up and start yelling at me and screaming at me.
Oh, really?
Yes, I think they were jealous or something.
Absolutely, and it's so funny, aren't they?
And knocking on the window, you know, it was really all quite extraordinary. It was what my friend, the Bushmeat Project psychologist, Dr. Tony Rose, calls an interspecies epiphany. I just was like, wow, and you know. Just to have this interaction with these females, you know, first a kind of a sexual interaction, and then this jealousy interaction, and just feeling how close they are.
You're so wonderful. I'm so glad that you're an advocate for bonobos, and I really appreciate everything you're doing for them.
Well, I appreciate you more.
I appreciate you more.
Okay. Well, we should let you go soon and get back to your hubby, you know, so you can...
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure. And
let's clarify. Where can we get adopt
okay,
a bonobo?
We want to do a little ending
where,
here.
Where
we
do people send money?
Get all the websites going again.
Yeah.
Where do people adopt a bonobo, and where do they find your book? Go ahead.
Okay. Adopt a Bonobo, www.friendsofbonobos.org, and my book website is just www.bonobohandshake.com.
Okay, and what is your next project?
Just finding out more about bonobos. I just came back from the book tour, and so, yeah, I'm just recovering. I'm catching up on a bit of sleep.
Great. Well, it's a great book, and it could be a movie, except I don't know how you... would make a movie of it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Anyway, take care, and I hope you have a nice bonobo time with your beautiful husband tonight.
Oh, thank you. And, go bonobos.
Yes, go bonobos.
Thank
go
you
bonobos.
So much.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Okay, bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Great inspiration.
Bye.
Wow.
Wow.
I'm just all aglow, a bonobo glow. But, you know, I wanted to talk to my guests a little bit here, my other guests. You're pretty inspired by the bonobo handshake.
Yes.
Jeanette.
Yes, I am.
And Patrick.
Get close to your mics.
Paradigm shifting,
yeah,
really. As much as we're on the cusp of a brand new era, We can address fuel differently. We can address the way we get our energy differently. I'm a big hemp activist, hemp from head to toe. I run my car on hemp oil. It's how we address human interactions in the new future that we're going to have to address most closely.
One thing that I didn't bring up with her is how, you know, we can use the bonobos as an inspiration when couples, as couples, we're fighting with each other, because they take fighting and turn it into sex. And we all know that makeup sex is really hot.
Yes.
Makeup sex.
It's very hot.
It's very hot.
Yes.
And that's because of the conflict.
Let's have an argument.
Yeah.
Well,
is fun.
I don't think you want to create an argument, but sometimes you can look at an argument, and just in case you're not that, you know, invested in your argument, and most of the time we argue about nothing, right?
Right.
Couples tend to argue about very sort of irrelevant things. It's just maybe we should turn that energy into sex.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got to be cooperative, though. You've got to, you know. But, I mean, if we have that in our mind, I think that we can do more of that.
Right. Use it as inspiration, you know, create the edge that we need to get over to have an argument, and then use it for sex.
Yes. Yes. And knowing that when we're in the middle of an argument, if one partner, you know, kind of reaches for the other's crotch, that we shouldn't push them away.
Right.
We should kind of be open to that.
Right. Unless you want it rough, and then, you
well,
know, but you have to agree to it ahead of time.
And by the way,
know.
Bonobos can be a little rough, I mean, with the sex. I mean, they're, you know, they're pushing each other around.
Right.
And
right.
A little bit, you know.
I'm taking notes. We're watching the film behind you roll the whole time, and it's inspiring tantric
it's
practice.
Pretty amazing stuff. Huh?
Hanging from trees.
Yeah.
Stuff
yes.
I never thought of.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're really strong, and they really have all these different positions that they can get into. I mean, they're pretty amazing. Their bodies are very similar to us, I think. I mean, you see the musculature, and you see in the faces, especially of the babies, you see a lot of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe because the babies are, you know, the adults sort of get all these wrinkles and kind of more a little more of a brow, but you see it in their arms, and look at them washing themselves, and they have a lot of fun. They really do. And there is, I think, maybe that's Mimi or one of the big mamas taking a bath. And yeah, bonobos love to take baths. I don't know if common chimps do, but bonobos love the water because they're, of course, always near the Congo in the jungle. I wonder how they do with a hot tub. That might be a way to get group sex going.
Yeah, no, I'm on a personal level very inspired by the bonobo since I was introduced to them in the 90s with Terrence McKenna. They
uh-huh.
really are masters of the Taoist practice. The Taoist practices don't focus sexuality on the male orgasm.
Uh-huh.
There's a series of inner orgasms a man can have, and he can build up over days or weeks
yes.
to build up to an actual orgasm. And understanding that's really the focus of the male sexual interactions here. It's not building up to orgasm every time. It's sex play. So it's little bursts of energy
yes.
that tend to leave men in a much more energized and focused and caring and loving space afterwards.
Right. And, I mean, if you see them in these movies, you notice that when they do have intercourse, that part doesn't take very long. It's like they don't try to be Olympic porn stars, okay, with intercourse. They just kind of do it pretty fast. But it's the foreplay, what we would call foreplay. It's all the touching and stroking and kissing and the loving stuff that is really, that they spend just hours and hours on. That's what they really go for. And I mean, it's amazing. And sometimes it even has embarrassed me, okay? I didn't talk about this with Vanessa on the line, but I, you know, if she listens to this show, she'll hear this. When I was last in the zoo, or one of the times I was there,
I think it was the last time we were there. Right.
One of the male bonobos and the female were kind of courting. They were doing this little dance or foreplay.
I think they were also trying to shock the audience.
Well, we don't know what they were doing,
well,
but one thing, oh, just physically, here's what they were doing. There was like a cliff, and the female bonobo was on one side that we couldn't see very well, and the male bonobo was on the side that we could see well, and he's hanging by one hand on this cliff. And we don't see him from the front, we see him from behind. We kind of see the female's face on the other side, and we see the male from behind. And we see him take his finger, okay, and what can I say?
Put it in his, you know.
Anus. Right. He stuck it in there. And
he's going like
he's giving
this.
Himself a prostate massage right there.
And amazing.
He's fingering his butt. And it, right in front of everybody. I mean, all the humans are there at the zoo. And I mean, he's doing it not just for a few seconds. He's doing it for several minutes.
And then looking back at the audience, at the people
looking
watching.
Looking back
him,
at us like, to check us out. And I don't know what to make of that, really. I mean, I'm filming it, and I'm going, wait a second. I mean, and at this point, I'm going, I this is not erotic. I don't think you should be doing this. I'm like, feeling like a prude myself over this. I mean, this bonobo's sticking it up his butt.
And it was not in conjunction with some sort of sex with the female.
Well, the female was on the other side of the cliff, and she was hanging, and I think she was doing something similar.
So it was sort of
I think they were doing a mutual masturbation
away, right.
thing, looking at each other. They were definitely looking at each other, but aware of the humans at the zoo, you know, looking at them. And, I mean, I don't know how much of it was just between them and how much of it was this odd exhibitionist thing.
But it was his anus and not his penis.
It was definitely his aim. He was sticking the finger in the only hole that the guys have.
Right.
So, you know.
You had the camera going, too.
Yeah, I did. And that was another thing, is when I came back from there, I'm going, wait a second. It was a hot day. Maybe I was, like, tripping or something. And I looked at the footage, and I went, nope, there he's doing it. He's really giving himself a prostate massage. And,
More power to him.
Well, yeah. I mean,
maybe the bonobos are like the dolphins, but because they're more similar to us in structure, we can understand how they express that love or affection or understanding, compassion for each other.
Well, you're right. Dolphins are also very sexual and very smart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're pretty cool. They're pretty damn cool. We like dolphins, but they don't look like us. So what do we, you know, I mean, they're not that relate. I mean, we're related to all creatures, of course. And dolphins are very interesting, but bonobos are related to us. And I mean, I don't know how many positions dolphins can get into because their bodies are not that, you know, I mean, they're different. Bonobos are our cousins. That's the big difference. And yeah, I mean, dolphins are really intelligent, but I don't know. Maybe I feel that we have a little more potential to communicate with bonobos because of our sharing so much.
So listen, we have some kind of bonobo from Utah. His name is Spencer, and he wants to know the best way to handle incest.
Oh. Well, I don't know if we should use the bonobos as a role model,
right.
because they have a lot of incest.
Right, but that's because they're bonobos.
They're bonobos. Some ways we don't want to.
Of course, he's from Utah.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe they're like bonobos in that way, you know.
And because what isn't the thing that differentiates them from us is what we call civilization or being civilized.
And the hair.
Or right. so-called.
Being so-called being civilized.
Okay, let's put him on.
You want to talk to him?
Let's see if he's there.
Because I didn't take any of the other calls because she was so great.
We didn't want to take any other calls.
So let's see here. Hi, Spencer.
Hello. Hi, Spencer.
Hi.
So...
Okay, should I just go ahead and ask the question?
Go ahead.
Okay. When I was younger, I prefaced this by saying, see, I'm in a wheelchair. I have an older sister, and when we were younger, there was some things that happened basically because I was in a wheelchair, she took care of me a lot.
Uh-huh.
And we even shared a room for a a short time, and there would be things happen, like she would basically do things like she'd get undressed right in front of me and yeah. things like that, and just didn't seem to think anything of it. Or there would be things like when she was barefoot, I would find myself a lot of times, we'd be watching TV, I'd find myself like playing with her feet and things like that. And
yeah.
over the years, I've noticed just this urge to be able to have incest with her has kind of grown inside me.
Mm.
I know I can't do that, obviously, because it's illegal and it would ruin the relationship, but what I would like to know is...
By the way, I don't think it is illegal, but it would ruin the relationship.
Satisfy my fantasy without ruining the relationship.
Well, yes, I don't think it's illegal, but still, it does have a lot of potential to ruin the relationship, and it's a precious relationship. I mean, this is your soulmate, your sister, but you know, to make it sexual, you're running a big risk. You're risking that, you know, like a lot of sex, you fall out of that desire. And you might feel like it would be just so great to get together and have sex, but the repercussions could be pretty devastating to your relationship. So, you want to know what to do about it. Well,
yeah.
Now, are you still close to her?
Well, no, we live in different states. She lives in Kansas. I live in Utah, and the few times we've seen each other, it's just every time I see her, these just feelings are really, really strong.
Okay.
And I mean, the physical feelings are really, really strong. And basically, what I kind of believe, I mean, my belief is that if you can, I personally believe that incest between two adults, I don't think there's anything actually wrong with it, what is what I kind of believe, but at the same time, you know, there are people that kind of, that it is taboo, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it myself, but what I'd kind of like to know is just a good way to satisfy my fantasy so I don't wind up acting out in some way.
Right. Well, I agree with you that there's nothing wrong with it that someone should be put in jail for or punished for, but it is a problem in our society. I mean, it's not a problem in bonobo society, and maybe in some other kind of society it wouldn't be a problem. I know Cleopatra supposedly married her brother, you know. I mean, it's been done, but in our society it's looked down on in a big way, so, you know, that's why we would suffer psychological repercussions from that. Now, let me ask you a question about your sex life. Do you have any sexual partners?
And I think that's part of the reason I'm in I'm basically in a wheelchair. I was basically raised Mormon. I'm just basically kind of just recently gone inactive in the church, kind of basically given up religion altogether, kind of basically.
Well, God
bless
you.
I believe in God, but I don't really follow a religion.
Okay, and God has blessed you.
No, I really don't.
Amen and amen.
Have any sexual
okay.
partners to...
Well, maybe you need a sexual partner. How about that?
What was that? I didn't hear that.
I said, how about, you know, getting yourself a sexual partner?
Yeah, that would be something. It's just been a little bit hard because I am in a wheelchair and just...
I know, but keep in mind that one of the reasons that you fantasize about your sister so much is because she touched you. It's just because you haven't been touched very much, and she did. She touched you. She got naked in front of you. You got naked in front of her. And you haven't done that with others. So if you did that with another woman, maybe you wouldn't think about her so much.
Well,
yeah, that's true.
Also, you know, Susan, that we have a very dear friend who's very bonobo-like.
Yes.
His name is, and I always, when I hear stories like this, are you on online? Do you have a computer?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You should go check Frank Moore.
Yes.
The artist Frank Moore in San Francisco, who's totally...
Well, he is quadriplegic.
Quadriplegic.
And he's got cerebral palsy.
No, I have cerebral palsy.
Okay. You have cerebral palsy, too?
Okay.
Okay.
Go to Frank's. He has more women than Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, he can't even speak. At least
the guy
you have,
can't even talk.
You have that over him.
And he's got a singing group. He's got a band. And he's got all these women that take care of him.
Yeah, he does.
Okay?
He's amazing.
He's an amazing man. And I always send people to his site because he is such an inspiration.
He is a great inspiration and a great bonobo. And
a
he's right
bonobo.
Now fighting for his life. And he's doing pretty good in the
pretty
hospital.
Good. And he's 60 years old.
Yeah.
They told him he wouldn't live till he was, I don't know.
Anyway, his cerebral palsy, I'm sure, is more severe than yours, and he has managed to have lots of lovers, women, I mean, galore. So you really don't have to let that get in the way, especially with the internet. You can communicate and find someone who you could be with. You know? How about that?
That sounds good.
Yeah, I know. It's a big thing, and it changes a habit that you've been in, which is of being alone. I mean, we're suggesting that you reach out.
Yeah, what's kind of hard about it is living in a place like Utah where everybody's Mormon and I'm really not, even though technically I am. It's just kind of hard for me to find women to date.
Well, with the internet,
the freaks
maybe
come out at night.
Well, there you go. There's always
even
freaks.
Even in Utah.
There's freaks
even
in Utah too.
That is correct.
Yeah, and plus you could hook up with someone who's not in Utah. You know, I mean, they could come visit you maybe.
Listen, I know all about Utah. I was in Utah in 1957. I was in Salt Lake City. We were driving cross country with two neighbors in a brand new 1957 Ford, and we stopped at this little motel in Salt Lake City, and we went to sleep. We were very tired. We were driving all day, and suddenly we heard fire trucks, okay? And they got closer and closer and closer, and then we saw the lights outside, okay? And the motel was on fire, okay? And so we jumped out of bed and ran outside, and out of the bushes jumps a naked woman.
Wow.
I said, we're in Utah.
Yeah.
All right. 1957. So I'm sure you can do well there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those Mormon girls are really nice.
You just have to take steps to reach out.
Yeah.
You know?
It's kind of hard.
It's kind of hard. Yeah. It's kind of hard.
What else you got?
More ways than one.
I mean, what else you got to do? You're sitting in a wheelchair. Go to work.
Yeah.
Get yourself a lady. Listen, become an artist. Once you're an artist, you get all kinds of women. You know, it doesn't matter. Okay?
Okay. Well, that's my that's our suggestion. And, you know, I mean, whether... The first thing is to just reach out and try to find a woman. And then, you know, maybe you can play brother-sister fantasy or something.
Or like Al Gore, get a masseuse or something.
There you go.
Sorry, Al.
Well, you know what? If you are really just too afraid to get out there, and you know, meet women on those terms, then maybe you should just hire a masseuse that you know kind of comes in and works you over. What about that?
That's an idea.
Have you ever had a masseuse come in and give you a good all-over rub down with the happy ending?
Or
without. It doesn't have to have a happy ending.
I haven't really done that, and
you need to be touched.
Different ways of
you need to touch. Humans and bonobos need touch.
And it just hasn't worked. I've tried satisfying it through... called a couple phone sex sites and that really hasn't worked, and so I'm just trying to find different ways.
Well, you can call one of our therapists. We'll take care of you.
We'll take care of you, yeah. It will give you the best phone sex
we'll
fantasy you ever had in your life. But you notice that we're giving you other suggestions.
Right.
But certainly that's something to do in the interim, you know. I mean, you know, you're a sexual creature, and if you aren't going to do these other things that get real human beings in your room,
go to Frank.
Then, yeah, I mean, sure, you should masturbate, and why not have somebody to talk to while you do.
Go to Frank's site. You'll figure out what he's done, and you can do the same thing. Okay?
Aeroplay.com is that one. Or just look up Frank Moore, M-O-O-R-E.
Okay.
Yeah, do that, because he'll inspire you. Okay, darling?
Okay.
Okay, be a bonobo.
Right. You be a bonobo, okay?
Yeah.
You take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And don't jump your sister.
Right.
Well, he's in a wheelchair. He's probably not going to jump her.
Talk to you later. But,
okay.
Great,
she might jump him.
Yeah,
who knows?
All right, well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, hey, incest is not really an issue among bonobos. They just all do it together in different ways.
Hey, you know. But, you know, so do humans. You know, it's just that we humans, it's very, like, a little touchy.
It's a little touchy.
I think there's actually a core wisdom within the social taboo, the global social taboo of incest, is it has the potential for unhealthy procreation.
It has that potential.
That's been the foundation. I mean, Sigmund Freud married his closest cousin. He was hanging out with a lot of royalty in Europe, so he married his closest cousin, and all six of their children were horribly, you know, were deformed and died before him.
Wow. And so Anna Freud?
Anna
Freud lived past Sigmund.
No. All his children died before him. He outlived his six children.
Oh, maybe Anna was his granddaughter, actually.
Jamestown, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
There's a whole intergenerational group of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. And and they have some problems, but you could see, you know, and everybody knows them.
Even think our friend, though, is looking to have intercourse here.
No.
I think he was looking for
touch.
He has a foot fetish.
Get a hooker.
It's a fantasy with his sister.
But I think the main reason it's with a sister, I don't think he's got like an incest obsession. I think it's just that he hasn't been touched very much in his life, and she did.
And she did, so she loves her. He loves her. You know?
Getting close to it,
okay.
Huh?
That was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Let's tell ourselves how wonderful we are.
We are wonderful.
We are wonderful, first of all.
Aren't we wonderful?
And of course, our featured guest, Vanessa Woods, is truly wonderful.
She's pretty sexy.
Isn't she beautiful?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, incredible. I mean, and inside the book, you get more pictures of her and her cute husband, Brian Ware, primatologist. And of course, you can see her all over YouTube as well.
Yeah.
And we want to also thank Dr. Richard Wrangham, because he was one of the supervisors of her original projects with her husband. And everyone who works on the bonobos, Franz de Waal, even Gottfried, you know, we thank you.
Even Sue Savage-Rumbaugh.
Oh, even Sue Savage-Rumbaugh, who works with Kanzi, even though she has given me a really hard time for the bonobo way.
We love you anyway.
But, you know, and dressing bonobos in lingerie, which I've never had the opportunity to do. But anyway, I'm a sex therapist, and I promote bonobos. I love bonobos, and they're sexual, so.
Sex instead of violence. I mean, what better tone for the 21st century?
Well, exactly. Make love, not war. They are the make love, not war chimpanzees. And as Franz de Waal says, the chimpanzees use power to get sex. In other words, they overpower each other to get sex. And bonobos use sex to get power. In other words, if they're very sexual, they are more powerful.
Hmm.
And it's just an interesting difference, and maybe we need to use a little more sex to get power, use a little more, not just sex, but pleasure, just giving things that give pleasure, because when bonobos rub genitals against each other, it like we said, it's not just about intercourse, it's about pleasure giving. And maybe instead of making war on the Middle East or wherever we make war, it might be a good idea to, send them
masseuses.
Masseuses, right. Or drop pocket rockets and not Patriot missiles, you know, or bananas. I mean, just to reach out with pleasure.
Vibrating bananas.
And I bet we'd get more converts to our way. The only thing is, it wouldn't support the military-industrial complex, which is
right,
the biggest industry in America.
They're on their way out. Their day is over.
Well, we'll talk about that next time. I hope you're right.
We can only hope.
I do. I hope you're right, but it seems like...
Because
that's the only one who benefits from the wars. I don't even think the oil industry benefits from the wars.
Just
the military.
Old Eisenhower, that was his goodbye address to the American people.
He knew his military.
The greatest enemy is the
military-industrial
complex.
Yeah. And they have pretty much been the alpha company in America. And America doesn't really make much anymore, but we do make war.
And weapons.
And
mass destruction.
Yes. And the bonobos are expressing a weapon of mass seduction right now. And they're seducing all of us. Right. And this show is about weapons of mass discussion. We discuss all kinds of stuff. And we're so happy that you have joined us tonight. And thank you all also for joining us, Patrick and Jeanette. And Shari Baby and everybody who's participated in the show tonight. Definitely get Bonobo Handshake. Make like bonobos.
Adopt a bonobo.
Baboons. Adopt a bonobo, right? And make like bonobos, not baboons. Make love, not war. Make love to someone you love tonight, even if that someone is you. I love you.
Need to talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else? You can talk to us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves, but my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience, or a combination. My world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role-play for you, fantasize with you. No fantasy is too taboo, and help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. For more information, call us at 213-291-9497. That's 213-291-9497 anytime you need to talk.
You're listening to Radio Susie One.